University of Texas, and I'm here to talk a little bit about secondary struggling readers. Most of you know that the majority of attention in the last 10 years has really focused on beginning reading, which of course is important, but we know that there are still students who moved past third grade that have instructional needs with respect to reading and writing. And we're going to talk about some of those students today. First of all, a quote from an older student. They always raise their hands to read. They are able to pronounce the words and answer the teacher's questions about the reading assignments. Poor readers are like me. I tell the teacher I don't want to read because I feel embarrassed and think they'll laugh at me too. That's a quote from a middle school student with significant reading difficulties. And this kind of a quote sort of is a wake-up call to all of us that not every student enters middle school and high school prepared to read the text and to read for engagement and their own interest. Another student said, I'm not that good at reading. It takes me a while, and when I'm reading a book, it takes me more than six times, and I still forget what I've read. It's very hard to keep focused and remember where I was. Even when I remember, I read so slow that I never finish my work. There are still lots of words I cannot pronounce, and I cannot remember how to sound out the words. Again, I think that's a reminder to all of us that many students, many older students who struggle with reading do so because they don't know what words mean. They don't have adequate background knowledge on the topic they're reading about. They lack the understanding of concepts and content. They have difficulty understanding text. And there are a subgroup of older readers who still have not acquired adequately fluent and accurate understanding of the alphabetic principle. They still cannot read the words. So today we're going to talk about how some secondary readers are doing across our country, what some of the causes of these reading difficulties are and the characteristics, what and how to teach these students, and a little bit about some school-wide models that might be effective. First, let's set the context. We know that, according to NCSE, that 32% of eighth graders are proficient readers. We know across the United States that 21 to 23% of adults demonstrate skills in the lowest level of proficiency with respect to reading. That's almost one in four adults. We know that 8 million students in grades 4 through 12 are struggling readers, and that every day more than 3,000 students drop out of school. This sets a very dismal context about the lower than desirable literacy rates of older students and adults. So when we want just the facts about reading problems with older students, we see that 25% of 8th graders are below basic in reading, that 26% of 12th graders are below basic in reading, and that according to the 2002 International Comparisons, Americans' 11th graders are very close to the bottom in reading when compared with secondary readers across the world. In addition, 8.7 million 4th through 12th graders are unable to read and comprehend textbooks. This really doesn't set a portrait that I think any of us would perceive as adequate with respect to the literacy rate of older students. And we know that this is important because when we look at the salary expectations, that high school dropouts make considerably less than those who go to college, and the range in salary increases on average as students' education levels increase. So with respect to the background on poor readers in secondary school, we know that 70% of high school students graduate on time with a regular diploma, and 60% of African Americans and Hispanic students do so. We know that high school students in the lowest 25% of their class are 20 times more likely to drop out, and that more than half of high school graduates enroll in remedial courses in post-secondary education. And one of the things that we find happening across our country is that institutes of higher education are sort of looking at high schools and saying, hey, you know, what are you doing with respect to secondary students that have reading difficulties? And of course, we know what happens at the secondary level in high schools and middle schools across our country, don't we? What they say is, hey, what's going on at the middle school level? Why aren't you preparing students to be adequate readers with respect to social studies and science text, as well as enjoying literature? And of course, middle school teachers are doing what? They're saying, hey, elementary teachers, why aren't you preparing our students to do better? But in the larger context, we know that there are too many students that enter the secondary grades inadequately prepared. We may wonder sort of what are the causes of this poor reading difficulty? And we can kind of look to a couple of variables that help us explain it. One is we know that some students have a learning disability, and they have dyslexia, and that it completely and significantly interferes with their success at acquiring proficient literacy skills. That represents a fairly small percentage of students and may account for, you know, 2 to 4%. We know that some students enter school and they're not very prepared for learning to read, and that they enter school with low preparation and that they never really catch up. We know that some students are not very interested in reading. They don't value it and haven't spent much time doing it, don't spend much time doing it, and haven't had a lot of practice, aren't very proficient. Some students attend school sporadically and have never really been in school long enough, consistently enough, to benefit from instruction that relates to success in reading. So we know that there are many explanations, but in addition to those explanations, we also know that students that have significant reading problems probably have not had sufficiently powerful instruction. So they may have gotten off to a very poor start, and they've never really recovered. So the document, Every Child a Graduate, makes the following notes. Research shows that students who receive intensive focused literacy instruction and tutoring are more likely to graduate from high school and attend college in significantly greater numbers than those who have not received such attention. So one of the questions you might want to ask is this kind of focus occurring in my school or the schools I'm associated with? What are some of the characteristics of older struggling readers? Well, one of the characteristics that's hard to get away from is that many students with significant reading problems spend very little time reading. And if you think about it, it's not all that surprising. Most of us don't enjoy or don't spend time doing those things that we don't do very well. So it's probably not that surprising that students with significant reading problems do not choose reading-related activities in their spare time. They don't even choose reading-related activities when it's part of their school practice. So if we look at these struggling readers, if you look at students in the percentiles ranking from 10th to the 98th percentile, that's ranking them from poorer to better readers, what you see is that the number of words they read in and out of school in 1 year is significantly affected. So if you're in the 10th percentile, you read on average about 60,000 words a year. If you're in the 98th percentile, you read 9 million words a year. And during the fifth grade year, the average student in the 50th percentile, that would be the average student, gets about 15 times as much reading practice as students in the 10th percentile. Now, 15 times as much reading practice. What's important about that, from my perspective, is not just that they practice more and get better and better at it. Reading then becomes an automatic task that is effortless, and in fact, you can all, when someone puts print in front of you and says read it, you can almost not read it. In other words, it's so available to you because it's such an effortless task. For students who spend a lot less time reading. It's so much more effortful. A second challenge for individuals who spend little time reading is that it's very difficult to acquire knowledge, key words, new words, complex words, and an understanding of these words and concepts and ideas without access to print. So when we reduce considerably, when students reduce considerably their access to print, they also reduce considerably their access to knowledge. So many of the poor students who currently perform below the 30th percentile in reading entered school with academic vocabularies only half the size of middle-class students. And struggling readers have fewer opportunities to acquire the kind of active reading comprehension strategies that become increasingly important as text becomes longer and more complex after third grade. So what we know is that older struggling readers are performing at different reading levels and will require different types of instruction. So as we think about what we're going to do to solve this problem, we need to think about what instructional practices we can put into place to address this issue. First of all, we know that our lowest performing readers cannot decode novel words accurately because they have weak phonic skills and cannot read fluently because their sight vocabulary is restricted. Remember, I'm talking about our lowest performing readers now. I'm not talking about all students who have reading difficulties. But if you take the very lowest students at the secondary level, you can be pretty confident that they cannot read novel words and cannot bring to bear the knowledge of the alphabetic principle to decode those words. And for that reason, it influences their reading fluency and certainly their comprehension. We also know that they have relatively weak vocabularies because they haven't been able to do some of the wide reading during the previous school years that really helps accelerate vocabulary and concept knowledge. We also know they haven't practiced comprehension strategies because they've had limited reading experience, so they haven't had a chance to bring those strategies to bear on text. And many of these struggling readers have really given up on the idea of ever becoming a good reader. They've had years and years of challenges, years and years in which reading text is difficult for them, years and years of discouragement around print. And so getting excited and interested in becoming a good reader has become more and more difficult for them. Let's look at the mid-level readers. These are students who are more like two or more grade levels behind, and these are the students that have reading difficulties, but they're not as significant as the students we talked about earlier. These students usually have pretty good knowledge of phonics and the alphabetic principles. They can usually sound out new words with reasonable accuracy, and they may have trouble with multisyllable words that are new and more complex words that don't follow regular patterns, but typically they're pretty good at word reading. They're often disfluent because they've not practiced enough with reading, and so their reading is a little more slow, a little more laborious, a little less automatic than what we would expect of readers at the secondary level. Their vocabularies are also relatively weak because, again, they've probably read less, they've spent less time with text, less time engaging with these more novel words that we have access to when we read print. Their comprehension strategies are typically inadequate because, again, they've lacked instruction and practice. And they often say they don't like to read because reading is still relatively difficult for them. When we think of students that are below grade level, these are less than two grades below. These are students who may have difficulties with certain aspects of reading, but overall can reach and attack the text that is expected of them at the secondary level. These students often have somewhat more restricted sight vocabulary, which leads to mild fluency problems in reading, and they often fail to apply active comprehension strategies during reading. They haven't learned to monitor their comprehension or engage in sort of thinking about text, grappling with text, asking themselves questions. These may be students who, when they don't really understand what they read, they keep on going anyway and aren't very good at using those kind of fix-up and repair strategies that good readers use to make text more comprehensible. So when we think about now setting the stage for what we know about students with reading difficulties, we know there's too many of them at the secondary level, and when we think a little bit about their characteristics, that is that the most significantly poor readers have difficulty across all of the components of reading, including word reading, and we think about students with milder problems needing more attention in vocabulary and comprehension, we need to ask the question, what should we teach older struggling readers? What must we teach students if we want them to become good readers? Well, there's a couple of things we probably need to think about. We need to think about the knowledge and skills required to read unknown words in text. And we need to think about how to accurately recognize many thousands of words at a single glance. How to understand the meanings of the words that they'll be encountering in their reading material, and how to think about meaning as they are reading the words so they can comprehend. So we have to ask the question, do adolescents with reading difficulties really need to learn to read in the same way that young children do? And I think our best answer to that question is yes. Yes, with a lot of caveats. What the caveats are is we have to understand that while they mainly need to read in the same way as younger children do, they have different needs with respect to how we engage them and how we make this reading process appropriate for them. They aren't just bigger kids who are poor readers. They are older students with a lot more experience. They have a lot more experience with reading, but they also have a lot more experience with reading failure. So we need to think about the kinds of text they read. We need to think about how to make that reading process and that reading instruction engaging. We need to think about ways in which we enable motivation with these students. And we need to think about having the text be appropriate and matched to their interests. One of the questions we might ask is, do we still need to teach phonemic awareness as an oral language skill to adolescents to prepare them for phonics? And even with our poorest reader, the answer to that question is probably not. So what are some of the big ideas from research on adolescent literacy? One of the things is that word attack and recognition plateau at about the third to fifth grade level for most students. That comprehension plateaus at about the fifth or sixth grade level, that attention to vocabulary and background knowledge is needed, and that students must be able to use literacy to solve problems and meet some of the demands that are real issues in their life. What are some of the most serious challenges faced by adolescents who've not yet acquired good reading skills? Three of the most significant challenges are that they have difficulties decoding, they have slow and labored reading, and they lack adequate background knowledge, and they have limited vocabulary. So if we were going to address each one of those for the students who require instructional support for those areas, how would we go about doing that? Well, one of the first things we want to make sure we do is that we promote reading with accuracy. So if students are extremely weak in phonics, we need to identify what they don't know and teach it to them. If they have third to fourth grade skills, we need to teach them how to attack multisyllable words and apply word analysis in context. What can teachers do? Well, they can do word analysis skills and word recognition skills. When they do word analysis skills, they can focus on instruction and morphemic analysis, word relationships, word origins, so that they make connections between word reading and decoding and comprehension. They can also focus on word recognition skills, in which they instruct in the orthographic processing, that is, how the letter patterns in print, in words, correspond respond with those sound units, that mapping of the sounds of our language to print. They can also focus on word analysis. They can teach students to identify affixes and what they mean, how to interpret the meaning of words that use common affixes. For example, re and on, li and ment. Learning those affixes, what they mean, and how to apply them, both in reading words, but also interpreting what words mean, is a very useful part of word analysis with older students. Teachers can teach students to look for words they know within larger words. For example, within the word resubmit, they can learn that they know the word submit, and they know re as an affix, and they can figure out that it means to turn in again. What are some more things teachers can do for word recognition? One of the important skills for older students to learn is to learn the syllable types, and teachers can teach these syllable types to help students decode words. For example, students who understand consonant, vowel, consonant, consonant, vowel, consonant E, R controlled, double vowels, and consonant LE are better able to look for those word patterns and read words that have them in them. They can also learn to read open and closed syllables like locate, and they can help students practice to provide continuous and extensive opportunities to read words in connected text. So in addition to word analysis, we know that many older readers have difficulty with fluency. So what are some of the things teachers can do to enhance fluency? Well, they can help with learning to read lots of words at a single glance. Part of fluency is really the automaticity at which we process words and really read those words with so little effort that we just sort of, even though we look at every letter and syllable, we sort of move through it very quickly, and we are able to free up our thinking to think about what the text means, to ask ourselves questions when we read, and to make the kinds of connections that making the text come alive and the print meaningful occurs. We can ask teachers to focus on practice with words from the 1,000 most frequent word list, because many of those most frequent words, those words that are the ones that occur in every page in text, are often the most difficult words to read, like from and was and because and friend. Those words are challenging, the theirs and the theirs. They show up all the time, but they're not easy words to read. We can focus on practice with words from texts that they're going to be reading, and we can give students opportunities to do repeated reading with models and feedback from texts they're going to be reading. So when it comes to focusing on repeated reading, which has been a well-recognized approach to promoting fluency, we realize that we need to be sure that we preview and model. There are several components that, if you're going to do fluency, are necessary. It's not just repeated reading. They have to preview and model before they do the reading. There have to be opportunities for them to get feedback that we need to have set in advance, a priori, a number of times in which they reread. And for different students, we will set different criteria for the number of words correct per minute. It might be 100, it might be 80, it might be 60, depending upon what students' current performance is with respect to words correct per minute on fluency. We then set a reasonable goal that they can achieve within 2, 3, or 4 weeks, and then we can plot progress towards that goal. So what are some other ways teachers can work on fluency that doesn't involve repeated reading? Because we don't want repeated reading to be the only practice that is implemented. We know that students need to be involved in wide reading, so providing them with exposure to different text types and a variety of content and vocabulary really helps with wide reading. And we also know we need to think about text that the students would select that relates to their interests, that enables motivation. So what are some other factors to consider? We need to combine fluency instruction with comprehension instruction and word study instruction, and we need to use expository text for practice. So now that we've thought a little bit about word analysis practices that teachers can do with older readers, and we've talked a little bit about fluency practices that work with older readers, how might we increase vocabulary of older readers? Well, it's hard to talk about vocabulary development with older readers without talking about wide reading. So one of the things we have to keep first and foremost as we're promoting vocabulary is to figure out ways to enable and support wide reading of a variety of genres and text types, including expository information and other related text types that provide students with a lot of knowledge about new ideas, new words, new facts, background knowledge. This will help them increase their vocabulary. So beginning in about third grade, we begin to see strong individual differences in vocabulary development, and these individual differences have a powerful and meaningful influence on reading comprehension. So development of reading vocabulary and enhancing concept knowledge can't wait until high school. Research has discovered that much more powerful tools of teaching vocabulary than are typically used in classroom. And so we need this robust approach to vocabulary instruction that involves both directly explaining the meanings of words along with some thought-provoking, playful, and interactive follow-up that makes learning words fun and that makes the engagement around words interesting and that makes students want to be word collectors so that they are interested in words, interested in word meaning, interested in using new words, and pay attention when others use new words so that they can acquire the meaning of those words and use them in their own language. Some of the practices that we talk about with respect to vocabulary, I'm going to highlight a few of them, and I want to acknowledge my colleagues at Texas A&M University, in particular Deborah Simmons, who has really guided the development of this work. So one of the core practices is previewing, prioritizing and teaching vocabulary, using context clues to learn the meaning of unknown words, answering and generating questions, getting the gist, maintaining a focus on vocabulary through vocabulary walls, and then using discussions after reading to promote vocabulary. So let me provide some examples of these so that they might be easier to think about within instruction. With respect to vocabulary maps, we need to think about some components of vocabulary maps, such as the word recognition, definition, illustration, context, etc. So if you look at the example that we've provided, it's a vocabulary map for the Indian Wars. And what you see is that the key word that we're trying to teach is conflict. And when you think about the word conflict, there's a picture right on top of conflict that shows an illustration from the textbook of conflict. And then you see that there's a very simple definition of conflict, a disagreement. And then the student is asked to think about some ways in which conflict relates to other words. So if you look at number 5, word association, you see disagreement, thump, skip, argument. And you can see that disagreement is another word for conflict. There's an opportunity in the open square for students to provide an example using their own language, and they can work with a partner to do that if you like. And then there's a context set for the word conflict. And there's an opportunity to do some word building on conflict and to give some examples of ways in which you cannot build the word. For example, in the word conflict, you see conflicting, so that's one way, and conflicted is another. But you also see the word conflictment, which really isn't a word because we don't use that expression. So we want to be sure that students understand affixes and how they can be used with keywords like conflict, but also how they don't make sense. So one of the things we want to do when we teach vocabulary is we want to be sure we provide a user or teacher or student-friendly definition. As in the next slide, you look at the word plateau is a high-level stretch of land. And then we want to be sure that thinking about the context, that is, this is being taught in social studies, what's an example of that? So, for example, in the word, in the example given for migrated, you see that more than 1,200 years ago, mound builders migrated or moved south into the Piney Woods region. Well, right in that sentence, the synonym for migrated is provided, migrated or moved. And so we can help students by teaching them strategically how to use context to find the description of a word or to find a synonym of a word. In the other example, it says the meaning of the word is implied in the sentence around the word. So, for example, the first sentence is the Constitution contained a Bill of Rights. The next sentence says, this bill stated that certain rights belonged to all Texans. Well, that helps you understand what a Bill of Rights is. So when you work with vocabulary, it's helpful to not just work with vocabulary by teaching students what words mean. It's not just helpful to teach them what words mean and to give them opportunities to use those words. Those are all useful, very valuable. But it's also helpful for them to become more strategic about how to learn the meaning of words based on learning about word parts through affixes, but also by using context. So teachers can do things like pre-teach words, provide repeated exposure, teach individual words directly, and teach morphemic and contextual analysis. When we work on understanding our comprehension, we really want to work on understanding and learning from text. And we want to teach students to think about what they're reading before reading, during reading, and after reading. And there's a lot of ways to do this. And one of the ways to do it is to think about using question cards in which teachers help identify who, what, when, where, how. And students use these to develop questions so that all of the question generation isn't in the hands of the teacher, but the students take on some of that. And there is a very deliberate, purposeful way in which teachers help students acquire proficiency in asking questions so they become more of the conversation about what's read, not just by answering questions generated by the teacher, but by developing their own questions and learning to answer them. This way, what about students that have acquired these reasonably good skills in word level reading but still struggle with comprehension? They can develop academic vocabulary, content-specific background knowledge, and work to develop active thinking and working to create meaning from what is read so that it's not just a question of whether its fluency is the issue, but that students can address comprehension. And so we provide a slide that looks at a meta-analysis of the results of reading interventions with secondary students in which we looked at outcomes on comprehension across a number of reading interventions. And this particular meta-analysis was done by Megan Edmonds and her colleagues and is to be published this fall in Review of Educational Research. And what you can see is that the overall effect for comprehension was a D of about 0.89, which is moderate to large. And what you can see is that on for comprehension measures, even word study influenced comprehension, and that comprehension in multi-component interventions also had a high effect. And there was only one study that looked at fluency interventions on comprehension, and that effect was relatively low. So what are some of the characteristics of interventions in settings that limit their effectiveness? Well,
insufficient intensity, weak instruction in word study, and little or no direct instruction in comprehension. What we know is associated with positive effects in comprehension with older readers is multi-component and comprehension interventions. And at this point in time, we are still seeking more powerful fluency interventions to improve reading comprehension. So we know that the very best teachers of students who struggle in learning to read are teachers who are relentless, who teach explicitly and systematically, who use scaffolding, and with their intensity are very concerned about time on task. And the last issue we're going to discuss today with respect to older readers is motivation, not the least important by any means. We have detailed studies of effective teachers who document that they are powerful motivators. Engaging teachers do something every minute of every hour of every school day to motivate their students, using every conceivable motivational mechanism to do so. Less engaging teachers actually do much to undermine student motivation, including establishing a negative tone, and engaging teachers never teach in ways that undermine students' motivation. So, in closing, we know about the effectiveness of most remedial interventions provided in public schools for students who are struggling to master basic skills. We know most of them tend to stabilize the deficit, and it's much more difficult to remediate it. So, in conclusion, there's no question that improving literacy skills in adolescent struggling readers is a significant challenge. It will involve intensive professional development for teachers, school reorganization, a relentless focus on the individual needs of every student. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Vaughn.
You're welcome.
We appreciate you sharing these thoughts with us, Sharon. We really do.
You're welcome.
Because we started late, I want to just give a little bit of direction to the audience, please. If you have any questions for Dr. Vaughn, please email them today or tomorrow to Straight Talk Live Chat at theinstituteforliteracyandlearning.org. So I'll repeat that. Any questions that you would like to ask Dr. Vaughn or the Institute, please email them today or tomorrow to Straight Talk Live Chat, no spaces, at theinstituteforliteracyandlearning.org. Again, no spaces. At the end of the call, sometime by tomorrow, you'll receive a survey that we'd appreciate you filling out. It'll take you less than 2 minutes to give us some input to how we can extend a better conference call to you next time. I want to mention also that the next live chat conference call is scheduled with Dr. Jan Hasbrook on September 15th at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Dr. Hasbrook will be speaking on using assessment data for RTI decisions. So in closing, I want to thank Sharon again, Dr. Vaughn, for your extended PowerPoint presentation and talking to us about how older students can be accelerated to a better level of reading. And please keep up the great work at the University of Texas, please.
Thank you very much. It's been a privilege to be here.
Thank you, and we'll see you all next month. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
The conference is no longer in lecture mode.